the average enterprise network engineer, BGP is found in the data center at the edge. Use it to connect to the WAN or maybe to exchange routes with another network that you might need to peer with, but by and large, BGP is more about the WAN and perhaps service providers or maybe the global internet. And it's much less about programming forwarding tables to route traffic around your data center. You use something else for that probably, EIGRP maybe or OSPF. And yet, BGP keeps popping up in SDN data center conversations, and maybe for data centers of size, BGP could make a lot of sense. So to find out when and if it does, we've gathered four engineers from various parts of the world to discuss data center BGP on this fifth installment of the Design and Build series. Now, this topic might seem a bit of a departure from the previous Design and Build shows, but we're going to keep this show in the same spirit as the others. So sure, BGP in the data center might seem like a fringe topic to many of you that are listening, but retrain your brain here for a minute. What if it's not? How would you deal with BGP in your data center? And let's introduce everybody that's on the microphone today. We got a lot of folks. I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter. With me is also Greg Farrow. You know Greg at Ethereal Mind. And then our guests from all over the world. I'm going to ask them each to introduce themselves, starting with Eric Leahy.
Thanks, Ethan. So my name is Eric Leahy. I work for a large enterprise based in Ireland. Currently, I am. I'm network engineer design, specializing in LAN switching for data center and campus and manufacturing. I passed my CCIE routing and switching, started this year, so...
Ah, you did version 5.
Yeah, that means he knows something. He actually remembers all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's still burned into the back of your brain, right?
Yeah. I still see it at night when I sleep.
Also joining us is Jason Gooley.
Hi, Ethan. Yeah, my name is Jason Gooley. So I work at a large network vendor out of Chicagoland area. I am a dual CCIE routing and switching and service provider, and currently in pursuit for my CCDE, and I'm hoping to go ahead and nail that in 12 days. Hopefully we'll see. I've probably got about 18, 20 years background in networking, and I came from a large carpet manufacturing company in Chicagoland as well.
Thank you for joining us. Dan Hertzberg is also with us.
I am Dan. I am a infrastructure engineer at a large enterprise. Currently work with virtualization, storage, networking, a little bit of everything. Historically, I've been a network engineer. I as well have my CCIE, RNS, and SP, but don't ask me SP topics. It's been quite a while.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, we don't care.
Yeah.
And then Justin Seabrook Rocha also joins us.
Yeah, I'm Justin. I'm currently a network engineer / architect for a large colo provider based in the U.S. So I do a lot of routing and switching these days, and unfortunately, they're pushing me more and more to other stuff, but BGP is still my core.
Perfect.
Yep.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us, and let's jump right into this design and build. I'm thinking in terms of a lot of people who are listening to the show that maybe they know an IGP, they don't know BGP that well. So, Jason, let's start with you. Let's do some level setting here. I want to know, for the sake of the audience, what is BGP, and then how would you categorize it as different from an IGP like OSPF? We don't have to go into the details because that could be a whole show itself, but
sure.
Could you comment on that?
Yeah, sure. So BGP, they call it a path vector routing protocol. And basically the difference between that and an IGP is instead of routing to a destination or a destination prefix, you're routing in between autonomous systems. So under either your same control or a different company's control, whether it's a service provider or an enterprise. So it's a little bit different in that sense, and it's greatly scalable.
Doesn't mean to say you can only route between autonomous systems. You've got BGP, and you can route within an autonomous system using BGP as well.
Certainly.
But traditionally now, as you described, you that is the big idea. You route between autonomous systems. It scales as big as the global internet. That, of course, is how we route at internet scale. And we really haven't used BGP as an IGP all that much in our data centers. We usually use something else. You get a feeling of why that is?
Usually, it used to be more around convergence and also sometimes skill set. Not a lot of people are super familiar with BGP running it inside a data center or an enterprise, so they traditionally stay to the IGPs. But I've seen it in both internet and in within a data center, within an enterprise as well. So I think it's that and maybe convergence. In the past, there weren't as many tools as there were today to converge faster in BGP, and IGPs were traditionally a faster convergence. So that was more so kind of some of the reasons that people didn't run it necessarily as an IGP.
Yeah, it's been my experience as well. I agree with all of that. Okay, so we kind of have an idea of what BGP is at a very high level. And folks, if you're listening to this, you've never used it before, you don't understand the rudiments or the mechanics of it, just dig in and Google it. There is so much information about BGP. Cisco.com is a great resource for that, of just free and very detailed information if you want to know more, to help you get some foundation and context for the rest of the conversation we're going to have on the show here. Dan, we were talking before the show that BGP is not merely a routing protocol. I mean, it is, but it's good for kind of a lot of things. And I know you were using some of those features.
Yeah, so BGP is great. I mean, for a routing protocol, obviously it scales very well. It's what this show's about and works fantastic as a routing protocol. But there's other vendors that use it for other things. Like, for example, like you look at a lot of SDN controllers. Like if you look at like how Nuage Networks uses EVPN and BGP to work properly to scale, you know, tons and tons of MAC addresses, or even something like a Viptela, the way you use BGP just for control plane purposes. But it's being used for not just traditionally for routing protocols, but for other things for a control plane.
Right, and we've actually done a show on BGP for EVPN and VXLAN that Cisco is actually doing that on their Nexus platform. And again, just making the point here that even though what we're talking about today is BGP as a routing protocol, there are other things that it's being used for that make it interesting and useful. It's finding lots of interesting use cases in the networking space. Okay. So, scenarios. Let's talk about some scenarios. Where does it make sense to use BGP in the data center? Eric, again, we were talking before the show. I know you've got some scenarios worth talking about.
We've recently just started looking at it in a case where we're trying to break up the data center into be more of a pod function-like, then controlling the distribution of the routes down into the rack easily through BGP. And we talk about pod and old kind of linear way of designing. When we looked at the data center was, you know, two core switches, you know, two chassis-based switches, and now futuristic design of thinking for a pod will be, you know, spine leaf topology and have a multiple spines. But what we want to try and do is we want to run each spine independently of each other. So BGP gives us that functionality and control that we're not meshing it all together, that we can have independent routing happening within the pod.
So in that case, you're taking a pod and what, making it an autonomous system and then connecting down to the spine as another AS? Or
we did look at eBGP as well within the pod and IBGP. So we're still kind of kicking the can around as such to get a better idea of which one. We were looking at doing IBGP down into the top of rack and then having the top of rack make the routing decision over a default route. That's what we were looking at as well.
Okay, makes sense. Now, another feature that is very rich within BGP is policy and policy routing, where you can control routes that are going into and out of an autonomous system based on some set of policies that you define. I don't know about you guys. Is there a use case for that in the data center? I mean, I think of that as a service provider thing, but thought maybe that rich functionality would be helpful in the DC as well?
For myself, not necessarily, because like we were talking about leaf spine, a lot of times, you know, you're concerned with the top of rack leaf switch to the spine switch, so you want to make as many ECMP routes as you can. Obviously, you want to try to make no real path control over that, but as far as path control, it works a lot better than normally like an IGP would in a leaf spine infrastructure, because it's very hard to filter, obviously, with an OSPF area.
Right. OSPF expects to see all the same LSAs everywhere to do its calculations. You can't not have that. And so, right. So again, you're finding situations where, well, I guess we all have, where it's nice to be able to filter a route or a set of routes, which of course you can do with BGP if you like.
Routing policy is where BGP really shines, in addition to being able to tag specific information with communities. If you want one host to not see any other or a certain specific of that host, you can do that with BGP really easily with routing policies, where it's much more difficult with an IGP.
Yeah, partially the reason why, too, about BGP versus IGP in the data center is community sharing. So in the past, obviously, with all your IGPs, with your OSPF, EIG, or PIS to IS, a lot of the issue was you had to know the destination or the source to filter. With BGP, it's really nice because you could use community strings, use it per data center, per top of rack switch, that sort of thing. So it makes it a lot easier and more dynamic for policies.
Okay. So actually, let's expand on that a little bit. Because again, if no one's ever heard of a community string, this is an attribute that you can assign to a BGP advertisement, and the community strings have whatever meaning you want them to have. And so in this case, you're using a community string to identify routes that have been advertised from a particular top of rack switch, or?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, generally in my leaf spine design, I use a a top rack switch for like a transit switch and give that a community string so that, let's say, a WAN router, a data center, anything that hits that transit switch or all the subnets in it, you can filter by that community string. Instead of using IPs or subnets in the future, it's all dynamic.
Kind of like when you do QoS, you've got to mark traffic with a DSCP value and then apply policy based on the value. You don't really want to apply policy based on IPs. IPs just don't last that long. You can't count on them being there. It doesn't scale real well if you're trying to write access lists and so on either. Okay.
Communities definitely help when you're not when you're in VM mobility, when your slash 32 host routes can be anywhere and it's really hard to summarize. So instead of summarizing or doing policy based on subnets, you're doing policy based on communities.
As in, right, when you've got a host route living literally anywhere in the data center and still needing to make decisions, again, it goes back to that notion of, well, I'm saying tagging just to give it a kind of a point of common everybody can relate to. I mean, would that be an exaggeration to call a community a tag? I suppose it would be. Right, now you can make decisions based on that community value. Instead. Okay. Interesting. See, part of the reason I wanted to do this show because I keep hearing about you guys running BGP in the data center and I haven't. And so this is for me, it's like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. That's pretty cool. What other scenarios make sense to use BGP in the data center? We get good scalability. We get good grouping with autonomous systems if we need. We get control with communities. Are there anything else leap into mind where you guys are glad you've got BGP as your in your tool bag?
I would say maybe multi-homing internet and different things like that make it a little bit easier when you're running BGP, and you have some control there as far as some of the different attributes you could set, based on either communities or AS path prepending and different things like that to kind of control the flow inbound and outbound of internet into your data center. I think that's a very big use case that I've seen.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Yep.
It also makes sense for me for in the case of service chaining. There are multiple ways you can do it. MPLS, I think IPv6 again, a service chaining header now. But you can definitely do service chaining with communities. So, one Tor tags a community and you want to send all that through a firewall. So you match on the community, put the next hop somewhere else.
Service chaining, yeah. I've heard BGP. I've heard a lot of different ways that service chaining is being done. BGP being one, Lisp is another, and then there's several other ways that service chaining is being done. I'd be interested to see we've talked about network service header as something that may be coming in the future if it ends up getting broad hardware support.
Segment routing.
Segment routing, yeah. You said routing, not rooting. Weird. Mm. I almost said rooting in response. That was strange.
I like to change it up every now and then.
So before we move on to getting into some BGP data center design, I mean, are there scenarios where BGP does not make sense? If you're an engineer listening to this, you're going, oh, BGP sounds amazing. I'll use it everywhere. Is that a bad idea?
One of the reasons why we have not traditionally used BGP as an IGP when your network is multiple different sized links. BGP will work great when you have 10 gig everywhere, 40 gig everywhere. But if you have 1 gig over here, 10 gig over here, 40 gig over here, that's a lot more manual configuration for BGP. Whereas IGP, at least with ISIS and OSPF, that's all built into the protocol.
You can assign a different cost to the link, and that is baked into the metric to determine how you're going to forward traffic. With BGP, we're saying it has no inherent knowledge of bandwidth that you would have to bake in some sort of attributes so that it knows, okay, this is going to be a slower path, and then it is baked in. But it's all artificial. I mean, how would you actually do that?
Well, I wouldn't.
Right. Yeah, and I think maybe that's the reality of it is you do have all these different attributes you can assign to BGP, so you could come up with a system that would allow you to account for bandwidth in a kind of a sort of a way, but IGPs are designed to take bandwidth in. So take EIGRP, for example. It, in its metric calculation, bandwidth and delay by default are the two elements that are taken into consideration. So a lower bandwidth link results in a higher cost metric. OSPF is the same. Depending on what system you're using, bandwidth is part of how the cost is computed for the link. If you're in a Cisco system or a lot of other systems, you just assign a cost that is appropriate and then tie it to bandwidth if you so choose. And that cost becomes part of the calculated metric. In BGP, there just is no inherent notion of that. It's about, again, more thinking at the autonomous system level rather than...
It goes back to being a path vector,
Yeah. Right.
I can see if you're crazy and you start doing BGP between all your switches and your leaf spine, start doing bandwidths by AS prepending. So the more AS is, the slower the link.
Oh, Lord, that sounds horrible. So I think what we're saying here is, depending on what your data center design is, BGP may not make sense because it may not distribute traffic across your links the way you need, and an IGP may be a better fit. Or maybe you use an IGP for the underlay and BGP doing other things in isolation. That is a possible scenario as well. So it's not like you can just take EIGRP or OSPF or ISIS and throw it out and replace it all with BGP. Not necessarily. So obviously, use your head if you just got way super enthusiastic there in the beginning. So now we want to talk about design principles. Let's say we really want to use BGP in our data center. What are the big things to keep in mind? What are the concerns that we have? Because as you read up on BGP design, there's a lot to it that can go into it, and there's a lot of nerd knobs you can turn. There are a lot of features and functionality that are baked in there, and a lot of that came from the service provider background, their use cases and specific needs. Okay. Now, we may not need all of those nerd knobs in the data center, and hopefully we don't. We would want to keep it simple. But there's still topology challenges. There's still other concerns that we have. Let's start talking about some of these principles. One thing I'm kind of concerned about or curious about is the physical topology that you would need to have in your data center for BGP to make sense. And this kind of goes back to what we were just talking about with the differing bandwidths and so on. Jason, do you have a take on this?
Yeah, sure do. So it is funny because a lot of times you hear that BGP is, you know, topology independent, and it can be. It can very well be. But then again, there's also a lot of thought that you have to put into the underlying IGP, and then if you have a full mesh of IBGP or whether you're running eBGP or IBGP. And, you know, obviously, you know, if you're running IBGP and you don't have a full mesh, you have to look at the route reflectors or confederations to make that traffic flow happen. But, you know, it's one of those things where if you run into a data center, traditionally, before Leaf and Spine, when you just had two switches plugged together, you know, you might ether channel between the two, and it wasn't that big of consideration. But now that you're looking at Leaf and Spine, and you want to make sure that you have BGP flowing across all those links and be able to utilize a lot of them, your IGP and different things like that come more into play. So it's definitely, even though it is independent of a topology, it sort of does have some design considerations you have to think of.
There's a couple of major topologies we're likely to see out there in data centers. There's the three-tier where you've got a core, distribution ag layer, and then an access layer, and that's still common out there, very common. And then the new hotness, of course, is Leaf Spine, where you've typically got what they would call a three stage, where you've got a leaf, a spine, and a leaf in between any two endpoints within the data center. Or if you need to scale bigger, that could be a five stage maybe. Okay. Do either one of those lend themselves to BGP use better than the other?
I have a lot more experience with the three tier. And in that case, you know, if you have all your links, and if depending on if you're running multi-chassis or ether channel and you have everything forwarding, that's usually a pretty good design. I've done quite a bit of that in my time. As far as Leaf Spine, I've heard all kinds of different things as far as, you know, running BGP across that. And then even similar to what Justin was saying, I think about even running eBGP between different places and navigating the routing based on different metrics and AS path or whatever it might be. You have a lot of granularity with that, so I think it's a good thing.
What about BGP eVPN? So that is this idea of using BGP protocol to carry VXLAN traffic in tunnels over the backbone, so you can have layer 2 over a layer 3 routed network. Is that a consideration? So in an ECMP network, you might, one of the problems is, of course, if you want to have a layer 2 extended across all the leaf nodes, you can't if you're layer 3 in the core. Would that be a consideration here?
I think it would. I mean, especially in one of those situations where you're trying to take layer 2 from one side across layer 3 and back down to layer 2. Mm. Traditionally in the past, when everything was three-tier, I mean, a lot of time, depending on if you had a routed access or, you know, routed distribution, however you had it set up, you know, you might not have layer 2 going all the way back up to the core versus you might be routing layer 3 all the way through. So it's definitely something you should keep in mind.
Yeah, so today if you wanted to do layer 2 over a layer 3 backbone, you're basically stuck with NSX, ACI, VTS, Cisco VTS, you know, or Big Switch, you know, the Contrail, those types of solutions to orchestrate the tunneling protocols. But at some point in the years to come, you'll be able to do eVPN using BGP, that is distributing the MAC tables over BGP so you can create VXLAN tunnels dynamically. And that could be a design point if you believe that protocol is going to succeed, and there's no guarantee that it actually will sustain in the face of other competitive protocols. So that's a risk at the moment. But it might be a reason to drive into BGP in the ECMP architecture, Ethan.
Which is a different animal, right, in a sense. I mean, if we're talking about BGP in the data center for just simple IP routing, and then we're getting into adding EVPN in a tunnel, then we're talking about a multi-layer architecture where there's an underlay design, and then there's an overlay design that is going to benefit from whatever the underlay has become. And it gets more complicated yet again. And then the role that BGP is playing could be different too. It could just be an IGP, you know, in the underlay, and then BGP with EVPN to stand up those VXLAN tunnels riding on top.
It's one of those things where you don't want a spanning tree in your spine. You don't want to pay for trill licenses in the form of Fabric Path or whatever. So you want the layer 3, you want the BGP. Although, you know, coming back to this point of, you know, what do you need to run BGP in your data center? You need switches that speak BGP, and that usually costs a lot of extra money these days.
For us, that was one thing we looked at, was trying to remove spanning tree completely out of the data center, because we've been killed by it so many times recently. So to move to a proper layer 3 all the way down to the edge, you know, what does OSPF give you if you're running across a fabric compared to IBGP or eBGP?
Yeah, you're trying to reduce the blast radius.
Yeah.
So when the hand grenade goes off, the blast is only one switch wide or one rack wide instead of data center wide.
Yeah.
Talk about the blast radius. We talk about spines. I mean, when I originally started this, like, we did it with two spines and realized that when one spine went away, you lost all your bandwidth. Or I'm sorry, half your bandwidth. So all my new designs all include four spines. Talking about blast radius.
Yeah.
Working on a network at the moment that has a 12 spine.
Oh, well.
Yeah. And interesting. You know, the most interesting thing about a 12 spine network is that you end up with 600 routes that have nothing to do with just point-to-point links. And I'm starting to think about maybe using OSPF wasn't the best idea just because there's so many routes for point-to-point links in the middle. Anyway, I digress.
Just for clarity, Greg, when you're talking about 12 spines, you're talking about 12 spine switches in a single spine or 12 spines, each forming their own little leaf spine topology?
No, 12 spine switches in a single two-layer ECMP.
Got it.
Okay. So there's 27 switches across the leaf or 27 topper racks and 12 switches in the spine. So each... It's not a normal brand of switch. It's a Mellanox, and they have 12 40 gig ports. And so there's 12 in the spine.
Got it. All right. So here, I want to move this conversation along to another design element here. We talked a bit about physical topology and some of the implications for various things. There's no one right answer here. It is, you know, look at the topology you've got. You've probably got three tier. You might also have leaf spine and figure out what makes sense for you. It's not as if BGP can't work in one or the other environment. You can make it work in that scenario with some considerations. And we're going to talk about some more of these as we go on. Another question I want to bring up here is the autonomous system question. When within the data center do we make a new autonomous system or make multiple autonomous systems that are going to communicate with each other inside the data center? And or when does it make sense just to have one big autonomous system maybe? Or I could put the question another way. When do we EBGP and when do we IBGP? Anybody want to take a stab at that?
So I've seen designs both ways where each switch was its own autonomous system, or where each pod with its own autonomous system. So the one thing to keep in mind is with eBGP, it's a lot more manual configuration. You have to keep track of where all your ASs are, whereas with IBGP, you have to make sure that you have some kind of full mesh, whether that's actually doing a full mesh or using route reflectors or confederations. You generally don't want to have your IBGP domain split brain in any way.
So, okay, so let's pause and talk about this for a minute here, because this is actually kind of important. So within eBGP, you're saying it's more manual, meaning you've got to establish the links between each autonomous system that you want another autonomous system to communicate with, stand up those neighbor relationships, and make sure those are tied to your appropriate physical links and all of that. And you also know that you're going to have route symmetry there. Every eBGP neighbor is going to exchange all routes with every other eBGP neighbor. But within IBGP, it's kind of a different animal. There's a presumption that every IBGP router has got the same set of routes being received that everybody else has got in the system. And if that's not the case, then you need to set up a route reflector would be one solution for that. Route reflector gets routes inbound, reflects them to everybody else who is a route reflector peer of his. Peer, neighbor, whatever the right term is.
Client.
Client. They're sorry. You tell us, but it was I thought about that. And so that's a different design consideration. And as you were saying, Justin, split brain's a concern. You don't want your IBGP domain to get broken up such that not everybody's getting all the routes anymore because you've got some partitioning in the network. So, okay, sorry, that commercial break, Justin. So you were saying, you know, EBGP and then versus IBGP. And then, so then my question would be, you've said you've seen a couple of different designs. You know, one is a pod where there's an autonomous system, you know, in a pod, you know, a whole group of switches or, you know, racks in a pod configuration, or an external switch, or every switch is his own autonomous system. Which way do you think makes sense?
For me, it makes more sense for each pod to be its own autonomous system. And then say you're doing a five-stage class where, so your second layer of spine would be EBGP between each pod. And your first layer would be in your spine leaf, you have one autonomous system that talks EBGP to the second spine, which talks EBGP to the other pod. That makes more sense to me.
Now, Eric, weren't you saying earlier that you guys were thinking about exactly this challenge and trying to sort out what made sense?
Yeah, that's exactly what we were thinking of doing, was each pod would be its own autonomous system into a core spine, we were calling it, which would be the bit in the middle that connects all the pods together. And in that core spine kind of topology, we'd run two root reflectors in there, and that would just spread the roots around. So the core spine would be made up of four switches day one, growing into eight in the future. And they'll be all, you know, we're looking at, you know, 100 gig kind of switches for that environment. We were looking at, the way we looked at it, that's just for quick switching. You know, there shouldn't be much.
Keep the spine simple, have it pushing traffic out the door as quickly as possible.
The way we were kind of looking at our business case was, you know, for us as an enterprise, you know, our traffic load always goes from the server all the way out to the edge, out to the WAN edge. So to us, we needed, you know, 40 gig to the leaf and then 100 gig up into the core spine and then back out into the WAN or wherever it needed to get to. That's kind of what we were looking at, the EBGP for the pods into an EBGP into the core spine and then running the root reflectors in the core spine as an IBGP.
And then how big would your pod be? Just curious.
We're looking at about 28 racks.
And so that would be, again, a pod as its own autonomous system?
Yes. Yeah. So within that pod, you'd have the four spine switches and they would connect down into the leaves, which are, say, top of rack, or that's kind of the leaf layer that we're looking at.
Okay, so now let's move the conversation along to route reflectors, which are, you know, the question I originally posed was, are route reflectors useful in BGP data center design? The answer to that question is yes. So I think we need to talk a little bit more about what a route reflector is and then how you position a route reflector in the BGP data center design. Any of you guys want to grab that one?
The most useful thing about a route reflector is it reduces your number of IBGP peering relationships.
So then back up a step and just tell us exactly how a route reflector would work.
So in a classic IBGP design, it's a full mesh. So every single router slash switch is peered with every other router slash switch. If you have 12 spine switches and 80 leaf switches, that's a lot of IBGP peering. So instead of doing that, you would say run 3-4 route reflectors on your spine, and each leaf switch just has to peer with route reflector. So each leaf switch has 4 peering relationships instead of hundreds.
The challenge being if you lose your route reflector, right?
Yeah, that's why you have more than one for redundancy.
Okay, so then if I'm setting up more than one route reflector within my IBGP autonomous system, what are we looking at as far as the redundancy goes? Just picking two? Are we looking at physical partitioning? What's our, you know, how are we doing that design?
What you're asking there is how many route reflectors would you have? Would you have 2, 4, 6?
I'd start with 2 and no more than 4. Okay, the problem with route reflectors is every time you add a route reflector, in a normal scenario, that also doubles the amount of routes you have. You can do it two ways. Each route reflector has its own route distinguisher. So it's just each route reflector is a distinct route, or they all share a route distinguisher. So you don't double the number of routes. But if you have 4 route reflectors, now every single route is, you have 4 of them. So you just quadrupled your routes.
It's difficult to sort of explain that really, but you've really got to know the BGP protocol. First thing to say here is you've really, really got to know what route reflectors work and how every one of the routes is tagged and root descriptors and all that sort of stuff. And then you've got to understand. So two is the way I would go because of what you've described. Every time you have four, you've got to try and sync all the root reflectors. You've got to have all the code. It actually gets more complicated having four than it does having two because you've got to keep them in sync, I think.
Yes.
What are we saying? More is not better? More no, route reflectors.
Two route reflectors is plenty.
Yeah, and those are all the reference designs I've seen. It's typically two. You've got one, and then you've got another one, and then logically you're positioning them such that they're in different failure domains, hopefully, so that whatever clobbers one doesn't clobber the other one is the big idea here. And that, again, just if we've lost sight of what a route reflector is, within IBGP, within that autonomous system, you need to have you have the opportunity here to have one guy, the route reflector, who's telling everyone else what the routes are rather than relying on, as Justin described, the classic IBGP approach of every single router having to be fully meshed with every other router and standing up all of those, oh gosh, all of those different route relationships, which would kind of suck. So yes, route reflectors have a role in BGP data center design. You probably want two of them. And then you're going to position them in a way just like you think about any other redundancy design in your data center. Use your head logically, of course. Another question for you guys. Now, if I'm sitting on a router and I type router OSPF1 or whatever the process ID is and kick it off, it's never really a thought in my head that, oh gosh, you know, the router better have enough memory and CPU to handle this. And, you know, I'm never worried about that. I just start the process and off I go. Do I have to be concerned in some unusual way about BGP?
Somewhat. I mean, a lot of us are running this on leaf spine. So, you know, top rack switch, we're using 1RU, 2RU type of leaf switches. So aggregation's really common because obviously, you know, FIB's going to kill you. RIB, you know, is not going to be that big of a deal. But if the better places you can aggregate and summarize is better for BGP, obviously.
And that's what we were looking at as well. We were kind of saying, hey, the leaf switch will only have one, well, logical path, let's say, out. So why send the whole BGP table down to it? So we were just thinking send default route down into the leaf switch. It can make the decision to get out itself.
So what we're saying is the BGP process itself isn't unusual or anything. It's just another process you spin up on the box, but we still want to follow the same kind of summarization guidelines that we would in any other routing design. So in OSPF, we might have a summary area that only gets a default route or only gets certain routes sent into it. And with BGP, we still want to conserve memory. We still want to be just as careful there as we do anywhere else. Is that's what I'm hearing from you guys.
Yeah, that's pretty on the money. I mean, I think from a design perspective, obviously, I mean, if you're using it to, you know, you don't want to take the whole internet routing table into your data center. Maybe you do, right? It's based on route. So I think at that point, you know, always aggregate as much as you can. And if you're taking on a full internet routing table, then maybe you'd be a little bit more concerned about memory and CPU. But there's always different levels of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've run full BGP routing tables on a Cisco, I think it was like a 28 or a 2900. Stuff it full of RAM, it can handle the routing table load. And then the CPU question is, every time the internet BGP peer comes up, you kill it with 500,000 routes, and it just sits there and kind of chugs for a little bit, and then it's okay. In a data center, you're not going to have 500,000 routes most of the time. It's just, you know, going to be much less of a, you know, a concern of an impact to the box, just the same concern you'd have really anywhere else. Just for point of context, how many routes do you guys deal with in your data centers?
Me, it's about 3,500 routes.
Yeah, I'm about the same amount of routes.
Yeah, I think my previous place was somewhere right around 4,000 to 5,000, and that was quite a large enterprise at the time.
Yeah, it's funny that so often on this show we get talking about hyperscale or web scale where they're talking about, oh, we've got, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, or occasionally millions of routes in the very largest of designs. But most of us, it's just not a big concern. 10,000 routes and down, that's for most modern networking hardware is not a thing at all. It's not, it's a blip, right? Still, you want to, you know, summarize and be well behaved. So in BGP, do you guys have particular points where you like to do your summarization?
Yeah, normally it's a leaf switch. I mean, for me, that's generally where I do it. Like I said before, it's all leaf spine, so it's very, very, very easy to just aggregate all your networks at the leaf layer and just, you know, let the spine take care of it and advertise it to all the other leafs.
So you've got however many routes you've got coming in on your leaf. You summarize that route, send that summarized or that aggregated route down to the spine, and the spine knows as little as he has to know. You guys, even though you've got the rib and the fib available to you in bigger boxes, you don't send every route out there to into the spine.
Exactly. Pretty much your classic like aggregate address summary command. I mean, that's exactly the way it scales very well.
It's also very similar to a three-tier. I mean, the same kind of concept, right? You want to summarize as closest to the source, and that way you're not dragging around thousands of routes for no apparent reason, right?
Correct, yeah. I mean, I use a lot into the virtual routing space, so you know anything that comes out of like an NSX edge router, same thing there for me. So any type of summarization I could do, it's better than you know, leaking out specifics.
God help you that you've got a good subnetting design that's going to allow you to do that, because in some scenarios you just can't because you've got what you got and it is what it is.
That's true.
Well, okay, so we've answered some big kind of design principles and questions, and there's lots more online about this these sorts of discussions. I wanted to move into some implementation details, though. So I've got a design, whatever it is, and now I'm actually firing up BGP processes. I'm establishing peering relationships. Now, if I'm used to an IGP, there are some things I might be thinking about that maybe I don't know how it would work in a BGP, so let's ask some questions. Justin, let's start with you. One question I have is about timer tuning. That was, you know, back in the day, that was kind of a big deal. I mean, within you know, OSPF and EIGRP, how quickly does it react to a change in the topology or a route being withdrawn, et cetera? And that was one of those things that you'd study. And in BGP, that it's not really what it's all about. It's not really all about detecting topology changes and reacting super fast and so on. So how do you deal with that in the data center? Do you tune timers? What do you do?
My answer to that would be know your hardware. A lot of the hardware in the past, if you tune your BGP timers way down, you'll kill the CPU. Modern hardware is much less of a problem, especially x86-based platforms. And even on modern hardware, I'd still recommend BFD wherever it makes sense, or wherever it's possible.
You know, BFD, obviously, you know, you want to detect failures in the low milliseconds. You know, BFD is a really good idea. It's good deployment, especially if you control both sides of the link. You have that flexibility to be able to detect as fast as possible. It definitely helps with BGP. In the case where you're peering with a provider, obviously, you have to get their buy-in and their PE router. They'll have to set BFD, but sometimes they will do that for you, depending on you know, what relationship you have with them. Then you're not really worrying about timeouts for, you know, or BGP scanner time, you know, and all these different things that take a considerable longer amount of time versus, you know, if something fails, you know pretty quick sub-second, right?
Yeah, what we're really saying here about BFD is it's an independent way to test that you have connectivity between two endpoints. It's very low level, and again, BFD is, it's pushed off to hardware in a lot of platforms, if I understand it correctly. Is that right?
That is correct. Built into the ASICs.
Okay, beautiful. Okay, so
it's done on the interface ASIC, so right down in the Ethernet code.
So then you're not impacting the control plane CPU of the box to be checking that you've still got a valid link end to end. And the other thing about BFD here is that when it detects that there is a link down situation, the other side is unreachable, he will tell the routing processes that are BFD aware, hey, we've got a problem here. So there's communication that goes on. BGP is immediately notified in that case of a change. And again, like Justin was saying, you're not relying on BGP using control plane CPU to be constantly polling and checking that something's still available. BFD will just takes care of that for you with no control plane impacts. That's are you guys using BFD? Does that seem like a best practice here?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and it works across multiple vendors too. I mean, like kind of talked before, I lost the spine switch and didn't even have a result of any packet loss. I mean, that's just how good it is.
No packet loss for real?
Well, I'm not going to say no packet loss, but it was not anything anybody noticed. It was just boom, down adjacencies. I mean, it's been really good.
Yeah, BFD is really fast. It's like 50 milliseconds.
All right. Now, another question I got here. I think, timer tuning really goes away if you implement bidirectional forwarding detection, BFD. I love when my voice cracks like that. It makes me feel like I'm like, you know, my son's age, about 14. Anyway, another BGP compared to IGP thing is ECMP. Now, when I think of BGP and you go through the how BGP does path selection, there's a very lengthy algorithm. It really doesn't want to have equal cause paths. You got to kind of twist its arm to get it there. You know, again, traditionally, with IGPs, you want ECMP. That it's baked into things. It loves ECMP. I have equal cause paths. That's great. I'm going to bake that into my routing table. And you look at the fib, show IP route. You can see what your ECMP looks like. So how do we implement ECMP using BGP in the data center? That would seem to be a super important element to have.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, pretty much all you have to do is just add maximum paths. I mean, BGP by itself doesn't normally, for eBGP at least, it doesn't scale beyond one path. So most vendors make you enable an ECMP functionality, at least the ones I've dealt with. But yeah, that, and it used to be an old historical feature in like iOS, is called AS Path Relax, I believe. But that should be enabled in everything in the future, at least everything, or I'm sorry, everything current that I've dealt with. But yeah, it's pretty simple. Just nail up your pairs. As long as most things are equal, just enable multiple paths and you're good to go.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you weren't expecting that to be a thing, then you wouldn't know that you got to add this command to make that happen. But now, how many paths do you typically scale out to? Just match it up between, say, leaf and spine?
Yeah, pretty much. So like we talked before, bandwidth considerations. All my leaf spine infrastructure, it's all 40 gig. So, you know, four spines, four paths. Because that's all the next hops you're going to have from a leaf to a spine.
And you guys have anything else to add to the ECMP in BGP?
I would agree, definitely the max paths of four. I was going to say that, you know, when we look at IGP and how it calculates ECMP, it's a lot easier to kind of understand why it's calculated that way. When it comes to BGP, you have to really understand the path process and why everything has to be fine-tuned and everything has to fall in sync together to be able to do an ECMP. That's kind of, you know, a learning curve I've seen for some people when they start looking at BGP in the data center. It's like, why is it really choosing this path? Oh, right. It's the longest known path in the BGP table. That's why. Oh, I've never gone down that far in the path table. That's kind of, you know, where we're kind of getting people to really understand BGP and how useful it can be for ECMP when you combine all this. And getting it right is the hardest part.
Any of you guys deal with cross-vendor BGP stuff where, you know, Cisco on the one side, Dell on the other, or, you know, Juniper in the mix, and had any problems that way? Because, again, this is kind of a historical thing, but for me, there's been vendor extensions I've been aware of, different things that have been added along the way that maybe have been vendor-specific related to BGP. Is there anything where there's interoperability problems that you've run into?
Not myself. I mean, like I said before, like, I'm a big NSX user, so even, like, virtual routers, even to that point, they just work. Even same thing with the rest of the Cisco. I've never dealt with any type of issue before at all.
Not on the BGP side, eh? Well, lucky you.
if you're sticking with, you know, standard V4 family, V6 family, you're usually not going to have a problem. Most vendors, BGP implementations talk to each other just fine. The problems come in how they handle BGP. One problem that we recently had was, so Juniper by default will not reflect your routes back at you, or will not send routes to you if your AS is in the path. Cisco, by default, will do that. Cisco gives you everything, lets you filter out as you will, and Juniper tries to protect you a little bit.
So not an interoperability problem so much as a, you know, difference in the way it behaves by default that,
yes,
yeah, you might not be expecting. Yeah.
The standard doesn't actually specify the default. It sort of says, this is BGP, but, you know, you do whatever you like. You sort yourselves out. Whatever the, you know, timers, values, you know, that sort of thing, as you say, you know, when a route's propagated, when they're not. But you've also got problems inside of operating systems. So each vendor's approach to how they write the code, routes might be propagated under different situations to they might be with another. So Cisco and Juniper might take a different view of how to propagate routes when they appear in the routing table, so forth and so on. And the order of processing varies from vendor to vendor.
My only comment when I said lucky you is I was just, I wasn't thinking about a BGP interoperability problem as much as an OSPF specific problem on an ASA running a specific bit of code with an Arista core switch running a specific bit of code where I could predictably know that if I do this and tear down the OSPF adjacency between the ASA and the Arista, it ain't coming back up. It made me very sad because it was a really super important OSPF adjacency to have running. Anyway, interoperability is one of those things that pops into my head.
But that's been the same for 20 years. That hasn't changed.
Oh, it is what it is. And everyone told me, stop using OSPF. It's like, I can't. It's an ASA. It's my only choice. Well, let's conclude with some war stories, takeaways, party thoughts, anything you guys have got kind of as a final thing that you want to share in the context of running BGP in the data center. And Dan, let's start with you.
Remember we talked about a little bit about using AS numbers and keeping good track of them and that sort of thing. I spent days trying to figure out why certain, and this is just funny because you'd think it would be something you'd first see, but I spent days and days and days trying to figure out why a route when learning to a different data center to figure out that a old legacy device we had from years and years and years ago is using the same AS number. So it was, it's embarrassing, but I'll tell a story, but it's something for when the to work with. And just remember, don't keep your AS numbers on an Excel spreadsheet. Try to get an IPAM system or something to better keep track of them.
So in that case, you had AS paths showing up from multiple places in the data center. And so you're saying, no, I've already seen this one. So it doesn't. This route doesn't belong here. I've seen it elsewhere.
Correct, yeah.
I have a very similar story to that in that we had multiple data centers running BGP between the two through our providers. And when we were migrating from one provider to another, they actually duplicated the AS number from the opposing data center. So then they wouldn't route to each other because they were filtering because it sees its own AS number in the path. And we just had complete outage. So it was a fat finger on the provider side, but still keeping track of those things are pretty important.
Do you guys have lab resources or anything that you you use? And, you know, like I know Quagga's got BGP. You can just kind of stand it up. There's Bird out there as a routing daemon. Are you familiar with any of those or have a strategy for people that want to lab up BGP stuff?
Yeah, so I mean, Cumulus just brought out their new Cumulus. I think it's XV, and I played with that a little bit yesterday, and that was pretty neat. But
Cumulus VX, yeah, I played with it some too. And the first thing I did was stand up a BGP between a couple of the VMs.
Yeah, it's very, very, very cool. But yeah, Quagga, obviously Bird, those two things will run on any type of Ubuntu VM you want to get, and they're pretty easy to set up.
Yeah, and in fact, you can use your Linux server as a BGP router at that point. Well, aggregator of routes, yeah.
I'm not biased on my side, but I've been using a lot of Viral and CML because it's free to me. But it's pretty impressive depending on what operating system you want to run on. You can run Nexus and same thing for iOS XR, which is pretty nice.
And you can bring in other virtual machines, non-Cisco virtual machines, into the Viral environment. I've been reading some of the documentation on that. I haven't actually done it yet. But I know people that brought up Juniper VSRXs in there. And I'm kind of wondering if Cumulus VX could get brought up in Viral as well, since there is a KVM flavor of the VM that Cumulus is giving away. So that's one of those things I'll scrounge away one night and see if I can hack it together and make it work. Actually, someone will beat me to it. They always do. But that'll be interesting. What about blogs? There's some pretty good BGP blogs out there, I think. Justin, I know you've got one or know of one that you like.
Yeah, one of my favorite BGP-related blogs is the BGPmon one. It's a bgpmon.net/blog. It's more about BGP on the wide open internet in the default in the DMZ or DFZ. So not very much about BGP in the data center, but it does give you a good idea of what happens out onto the internet with the BGP table.
Perfect. bgpmon.net. Well, I think this is a good place to call this Packet Push Design and Build number 5 done. And I want to go around the table one more time and give everybody a chance to plug their Twitter handles and so on as we head out the door here. So let's start with Eric.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Eric Leahy. I'm not really a tweeter. I'm more of a reader. That's really it. I have a really old blog website, ergley.com, that I use for my CCIE studying when it was version 4. Some information on there. It's for routing and switching.
Very good, and thank you for coming on the show today. And then Jason.
Cool. So my Twitter handle is at CCIE38759. I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook is Jason Gooley, and my email is jgooley@ciscoccie.expert.
Aren't you fancy, ciscoccie.expert. Okay. And then Dan Hertzberg.
I'm not as fancy. You can find me on Twitter at B-U-R-N-E-E-E-D. It's just a name that stuck with me. I have a blog that probably has not been updated in the past year. I keep telling myself I'm going to update it, but that can be found on my Twitter.
Very good. And Justin?
You can find me on Twitter at Zenith, X-E-N-I-T-H. I have a blog. It's not up, and who knows when it will be up. So Twitter is the best place to get in contact.
Do you have
with
a
me.
Secret blog? Is that what you're saying? You have a blog, but it's not up? What does that even mean? I'm excited now.
The website is down.
Oh, BGP problem?
Duplicate AS number, right?
And then, Mr. Farrer, where can folks find you?
As always, you can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com, making stuff up and rattling the cages. You might have appreciated my recent blog post, 5 Career Lessons I Learned from John Chambers. I felt like such a troll when I published it, but it's had a great
response.
It was
really good. It was, I read that, and I enjoyed that one tremendously. Anyway.
I know it sounds strange, but they are genuine career lessons that you can learn from watching what Chambers has done at Cisco. You may not like them, but they are actually genuine. Yes. Thanks.
And I'm Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter, where I tweet the most interesting content I've been reading or maybe lab work I've been diving into and odd handcrafted thoughts lovingly assembled in my synaptic factory. And hey, everyone, thank you for listening to Packet Pushers this week. Just like our guests, you are good-looking and well-spoken, and don't let anyone tell you differently. And if they do, shove them in the data center and lock them in an empty rack. Home base for Packet Pushers is packetpushers.net. So tweet your anger, your love, your bile, your praise at Packet Pushers. Share your private diagrams, personal thoughts, and peculiar questions with packetpushers@gmail.com. Seriously, we really do love to hear from you, and many of our shows come from what appears in our inbox. So please,
but we don't need those peculiar questions.
Just right, you know which ones.
Weird, but not peculiar.
Right. Please keep the good stuff coming.
Yeah. Personal problems, maybe not so much.
Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.